Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It is Thursday, January 3rd. My name is Rob Doster, and I have a fun show on the way for you today. I have something a little bit different for you. Not that much has happened in basketball itself over the course of the last 3 days since the last time I checked in with you guys. So instead of talking about the random wins and losses over the course of the last 3 days, I decided to do something a little bit different. I brought on Evan Daniels, I brought on Marcus Gradney, and I decided to get into the impact that some of the rule changes that were implemented by the Commission on College Basketball are going to have on the sport. Evan wrote a really good column on this on Monday, and I thought that it deserved a little bit more attention. And I wanted to bring Marcus on as well, because he is somebody that is close with a lot of these elite athletes and elite basketball players, and he comes at this from a very, very pro player angle. I think that his perspective on this is different than the perspective of a lot of people that we hear talking about it. So I thought that his voice was important to be heard in this conversation as well. Before I get into that, I have to make the usual ask. Please rate, please review, please subscribe to this podcast in any app that you listen to podcasts in. An interaction that you have with this episode, whether you rate it, whether you review it, whether you download it, whether you subscribe to the podcast itself, all of that helps. It helps us in the rankings. It helps us in the metrics. It helps make my bosses happy. When my bosses are happy, I'm happy. When I'm happy, you are getting a better show. So saying nice things and giving me 5 stars is really only going to make your life better. So I appreciate you for doing that. And now let's get into that conversation. We're going to start with Evan Daniels. And now I'm thrilled to welcome onto the podcast for the first time, actually. He is a Fox Sports 1 television personality. He is the host of the Sidelines podcast, and he is a recruiting analyst for 24/7 Sports. His name is Evan Daniels. He is apparently a very, very busy man. So, Evan, what's going on, man? How you doing? I appreciate the time.
Of course, Rob. I appreciate you having me on. Glad to do it. Fun time of year. I know you've been watching them. A ton of basketball, and I've been out about doing the same. So probably my favorite time of the year, really, especially as we get into conference season and stuff like that.
Yeah, the games start heating up and the fans show back up to the games, and we stop having to watch bye games in the middle of the week is a good thing for college basketball. I'm not going to complain about that at all. The reason that I have you on here today is because you wrote a column, I think it was last week or maybe it was earlier this week, that took a blowtorch to the changes in the recruiting schedule and some of the changes that Condoleezza Rice and the Commission on College Basketball came up with. And I'm just going to read the headline to you. The NCAA must fix its idiotic basketball recruiting schedule. So if you are going to put idiotic in the headline, I figured that I need to bring you on to talk a little bit about what some of these changes are and how we can kind of work through some of it. So just for the listeners, real quick, the basics. In August, the Commission on College Basketball, chartered by Mark Emmer and led by Condoleezza Rice, announced a whole bunch of changes to the way that college basketball is going to work. Some of them were good. Some of them were steps in the right direction. Some of them were just a disaster or, as you put it, idiotic. And one of that was the changes that was made to the recruiting calendar and the schedule for when these kids get recruited in the summer. So let me just start with this. Can you just kind of walk me through what those actual changes are and then what is your biggest issue with what those changes are?
Okay. Yeah, for sure. And I can't take credit for the headline. That would be my editor, Trey Scott. So he's the one that came up with the idiotic portion, but I don't necessarily disagree with it, obviously.
Shout out to Trey Scott for that.
In terms of the changes, so basically the biggest things with the revamped schedule is there's only one normal AAU weekend in July. You know, in the past that there's been three 4.5 day periods where college coaches could be out evaluating players at events all over the country, whether that be at AAU tournaments or like one day single day exposure camps, stuff like that. So we're down to just one of those. It's going to be the weekend that Peach Jam will go on. Adidas will do their tournament. Under Armour will do their tournament. So just one of those weekends in the new schedule. What they've replaced those two that they knocked out with is two high school weekends in June. Now, the issue with this is not all players are going to be able to participate in those two June high school weekends, Rob. Think about schools like Oak Hill and IMG Academy and Mount Verd, these schools, Findlay Prep. All these kids go home for the summer. So their teams aren't even going to be assembled. I was talking to Steve Smith, the head coach at Oak Hill. He's like, my team won't even be assembled at that point. I don't fully know who's going to be on my roster. So we can't play in that. I was talking to the IMG coach who just absolutely crushed Sean McElhoon, all of this. And his kids will be gone for the summer. And then there's the NEPSAC, the schools, the prep schools in the Northeast. They won't be able to participate. And if the National Federation High School Association doesn't recognize the schools in their associations, they can't play either. So that's the first part of it. So we already have 2 weekends where basically half the players aren't going to be able to play. And it's going to be a lot of elite players too, by the way. The other part is they replaced the last weekend with 2 regional camps. There's going to be 4 sites, Illinois, Connecticut, Grand Canyon, and Houston. And each site is going to have 2 camps over a 6-day period. There'll be 2 3-day camps, and each 3-day camp will have 300 players. So 2,400 players. One, that's spread out. 2, the players nominate themselves, and the NCAA and the NABC will determine which players make this camp. Honestly, it's just a disastrous idea. The fact that college coaches are now going to have to be making final evaluation decisions at a regional camp, not to mention it's going to be very difficult to find new players at these regional camps. It's basically a crapshoot. In terms of my biggest issue, I think my biggest issue, and you said it a minute ago, they did do some good things. I want to make sure I say that. They, kids being able to return after the draft, I think that's a good thing. Kids being able to take official visits when they're juniors, I think that's a good thing. But this schedule is awful. And the reason I think it's awful and my biggest issue with it is it's not only bad for the players, it's bad for the coaches too. So the 2 people that it impacts the most, it impacts in a negative way. I just don't think it was well thought out. And I don't think that the powers that be that made this decision knew enough about recruiting schedule or recruiting in general to make the decisions that they made. I know that was long-winded, but it's kind of there's just so many different factors.
Yeah, it was actually perfect. It was a really good explainer of what we're dealing with here. And I think you kind of touched on this, but my single biggest issue with this is it feels like the people that came in and made this decision are, one, people that are not qualified to understand like what's going on with the inner workings of basketball recruiting. And they kind of came in and they made this decision that was based on something they don't understand. And they just kind of did it. And they threw it on everybody else that it affects and told them that they basically have to go deal with it and figure it out and try to put all this stuff together. Real quick, there was something else that you touched on. The difference between – so most people think of AAU basketball with this kind of like negative connotation. And they probably think of camps, especially camps that are run by the NCAA, as something as a positive. I mean, your whole business is based off of evaluating prospects in certain situations. So can you just kind of talk us through what the difference is between evaluating a player at an AAU tournament and evaluating a player at a camp, and why the latter is so problematic?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just harder to evaluate players at camps. I think it's the most difficult evaluation setting. The one camp that I think is a pretty good setting is USA Basketball, but that's a little different. And I think the good part in some of this is they're going to have a little more involvement and they're going to have more camps. But the reason these regional camps and other camps are such difficult evaluations is you're throwing a bunch of players together that have no familiarity and expecting them to go out and be a cohesive unit and look good playing together after meeting a kid an hour before. That's just not possible. I was talking to North Carolina signee Armando Bacot for that story that I wrote. And we were talking about how bigs don't get the ball in camps. You know, in these situations, there's going to be a lot of players that are trying to gun for scholarship opportunities. And what's the way they're going to do that? They're going to fire up shots, Rob. You know, if I was in that camp, obviously I would want to try to put up my best foot forward and show that I'm a team guy. But I also want to get my shot attempts up, too. I want to be able to prove to those guys that I can shoot the basketball. And it becomes a selfish format. So that's my biggest issue with the camp aspect of it. And I want to go back to what you said a minute ago about the powers that be that put this together. Obviously, Condoleezza Rice is a very smart person, smarter than me. But I'm as qualified to be Secretary of State as she's as qualified to put together a basketball recruiting schedule. And, you know, I think that the committee's heart was in the right place, but they didn't go out and ask the people that it impacts. I talked to so many high school coaches for that story, Rob, and not one of them were reached out to. And these are the best high school coaches in the country. They didn't want the June weekends for the most part. And now you're throwing it on their plate. And when, one, they're not ready, two, they don't want it. It's just this whole schedule was just a colossal error. I know I'm bouncing around. You asked me to kind of describe the difference between AAU and camp and high school. You know, in a perfect world, you get to evaluate them in all settings. High school is great because there's a cohesive unit and you get to see those guys a lot. The camp setting, man, it's just bad. It is historically the worst setting to evaluate players and get a good feel for guys. And honestly, it's historically where the most mistakes are made.
Yeah, and the other part of it is there's no motivation. Like, you're not trying to win anything when it comes down to a camp. You know, we can sit here and criticize AAU basketball, and I know you know it more than I do, but I will say this, it's not perfect. It does have its faults, and it does have its flaws, but at the end of the day, these kids are playing for something. Like, the EYBL is going to Peach Jam is probably my second favorite event to go watch besides the Final Four and maybe the Champions Classic, because the level of basketball that is played is out of this world. Like, every single team that is playing at Peach Jam is going to have five high major guys starting, more or less, or you're not winning Peach Jam.
Yep.
And it's, these guys have played together, some of them for years and years, some of them for the entire season. They have defined roles. You can see what a certain player is being asked to do. A lot of them are actually being coached pretty well. Like, there are college guys, and Penny Hardaway was coaching in the EYBL, and former NBA guys. Like, you can go and see Bradley Beal or Chris Paul sitting on the sideline, like, helping to coach their teams. Like, I don't understand why people think that's a bad thing. And the other part of AAU is that when you do have these huge events and these guys playing within a team, the situation ends up being like a coach can walk in and watch somebody play, and then he's got a guy playing with his team that's maybe playing, you know, in a gym, they're watching the game before, or, you know, they're going to watch a certain guy play, and the kid on the other team ends up going for 40, things like that. Like, that's where you hear so many stories about kids getting discovered, and situations like that, just, they're not going to happen at camps. It's not going to be the same thing. You know, you're not going to be able to find the hidden gems at a camp because the stars are going to be the ones that are dominating the ball.
I'll give you a perfect example of exactly what you just described. There's a kid named Cole Bajima. I don't know if you're familiar with him, Rob. He signed with Michigan. We have him in our top 50, 55. He's somewhere in that range now. Heading into July, I'd never heard of him. Heading in after the first period, I'd never heard of him. Second July evaluation period, I went out to watch the Adidas Summer Championship, and the last day of the eval period, I slid over to a camp. Ryan Silver was putting on this camp, and I saw him in an all-star game. I was intrigued, but after that viewing, I would have never been able to say, oh, he's a high major prospect. But I put him on my list. The last July evaluation period in Vegas, I went and saw him with my colleague Josh Gershon twice, and we were taken back. Like, holy crap, who is this kid? He's a high major player. He's 6'6". He could really shoot. He was a pretty good athlete. He played with confidence. Like, he did a little of everything. And you could see on his team, with his AAU team, a lot. You could see a lot more in them. And there's situations like that that happen routinely late in July where a kid that has nothing but low major scholarship offers, and that is no knock on low major schools, that walk out of July with big-time high-major scholarship offers because of how they performed, and that's a prime example. Don't get me wrong. There is plenty of issues and ways that AAU basketball could be improved, and I don't want to sound like I'm caping for it. But I think you could say the same exact thing for high school basketball. A, you get a bad rap, and I think it's a little unfair. But like you mentioned, if you go to Nike Peach Jam, you're going to see guys getting coached. If you go watch Team Takeover at Nike Peach Jam and see the job that Keith Stevens does with that group, you'll be impressed. You mentioned Penny Hardaway. Sam Mitchell coached on the Adidas circuit. He's now he's a former NBA coach. I mean, there are guys and there are programs that do a really good job, and I think AAU as a whole gets knocked a little more than it should, because I think it's done a lot of good for the game, and it's given a lot of kids opportunities.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest issues that we're looking at with why these decisions were made and the impact of them is that they were put into place because, I think you said this in your column, it's change for the sake of change. You know, we had this FBI investigation, and, you know, AAU basketball was part of what kind of got the bad rap during this investigation, and it's what always gets the bad rap. And I think this commission kind of looked at it and said, okay, how can we change what AAU basketball is? They threw out these recommendations, they threw out these changes, and it really doesn't impact anything that has to do with what that FBI investigation turned up. All it does is just make life difficult for players that aren't necessarily top 50 kids. It makes life difficult for coaches that are trying to evaluate. And what it really, I think more than anything, all it's going to do is increase the number of people that end up transferring, because you're not going to be able to get the correct. It's already hard enough to evaluate at the high school level the way it is, with, you know, trying to decide if a 16-year-old, how he's going to develop, what his work ethic is, all that kind of stuff. And now you have to put this in the mix where really they're going to have a chance to evaluate at only camps, more or less, in the summer. Let me ask you this, and then I'll let you get out of here, Evan. Let's say that you are Condoleezza Rice. I am putting you in charge of being the one that kind of makes these changes to what the summer schedule would be. What do you think would work? What do you want to see? Like, what is your ideal scenario for kind of the way to go about scouting and way to go about recruiting and way to go about what the summer is?
Well, I think we should start with the spring, honestly. You know, this year there's only one evaluation period, but that's really just because of how the calendar shakes. I think we should do an evaluation period in April, like we already do. And I think that we should have an evaluation period in May. Make it late May, make it Memorial Day. All the kids are already playing that weekend either. That spreads it out, because in the past it's been just back-to-back weekends. That spreads it out. And then when you look at the summer, I actually really liked how it was. Did it end up being a lot? Yes. So I think in a perfect world, you maybe have two periods, and maybe extend a day or two on each period. So you could do two events in each period, do one at the beginning of July and one at the end. That way the kids have time to go home and rest in between, whether they take a week or 2 weeks off, and then do the second period at the end of July. I think that would be a pretty good scenario. You know, I do think in the past, by the end of July, everyone is exhausted, the players, the coaches, me, anyone else that's in those gyms all day. So I think in that scenario, I wouldn't try to eliminate AAU basketball first. I also think that the NCAA, and something they needed to do, was consult with high school coaches and see if a period where they allowed them to put on camps and kids to play in them is something that, one, they want to do, because it does affect their lives. And two, is June the best time for it? Because clearly it's not, when, you know, there's a good majority of really good players that wouldn't even be able to participate that weekend. So I don't know if you move that to September or the fall, I don't know. But I think that I don't think how we had it, Rob, was really that screwed up. For the kids who needed a little more rest, yeah, I think that's probably the biggest issue that there was.
Yeah, there were tweaks that could be done to kind of streamline it. I'm with you on just making it two periods, and maybe like have 2 6-day periods with a week off in between. Let's the kids get rest in between. It lets them show what they're able to do. You still get basically the same number of days.
For sure, and I think what that allows is you could, you know, there's all kinds of events going on, but, you know, for the most part, you know, a team could go to two different events. They could do a 2-day event or 3-day event in the first part of the period, and then do another one at the end. they go home and get a week and a half, 2 weeks to rest their legs, get regrouped, and then they go back out and do it again. I think that would be a good scenario. It's probably what I would say if I was in charge. But at the same time, I didn't really hate how it was set up.
All right. I said the last one was the last thing. This is the very last thing. Is there any chance that this gets overturned? I know that it's something that you kind of were pushing for in the story that you wrote. Is there any chance that it happens based on what you know, or are we kind of locked into this already?
I'm not naive. I'm not naive enough to think that they're going to go in and change that just because I wrote that column. I did think that attention needed to be brought to it. Look, I spoke to over 25 coaches for that story and college coaches, and I bet I've heard from 20 more since, and not one was really in favor of it. Obviously, the AAU coaches weren't in favor of it. The high school coaches weren't in favor of it. The players I spoke to weren't in favor of it. I mean, when you think about all of that, I would think that the NCAA would relook at it. Do I think they change it now? No, I probably don't.
It's incredible that they managed to make a rule that not a single person involved in the sport actually likes.
Yeah, I mean, and I do know that they consulted with the, my understanding from talking to some people that were in that room is not everyone agreed. But everybody, a lot of people had different ideas. And so I know they were consulted, but, you know, I think you've got to ask coaches of all levels, not just head coaches. You got to ask assistant coaches. There's just so many people that are impacted by this. I just think it's really mind-boggling how this is all set up. I mean, think about this, Rob. Think about how the players for 2,400 players for regional camps are even going to be selected. Like, who's going to select them?
Like, they nominate themselves, right? I am 100% going to nominate myself for those camps. I'm just letting you know right now. And if I get through, I'm going to go.
Well, the NABC and the NCAA are the ones that are apparently going to determine if they can go. And here's the other thing. They're spending a lot of money on this in terms of the camp. They're going to fly a kid and a parent to each camp. 2,400 wow. kids. Think about that.
Yeah, that is a lot of money.
So, that I don't know. I hope they reconsider it. I think my hope, by writing that story, one, I just thought the whole thing was mind-boggling. And I was hoping to capture kind of how the recruiting world feels about what's being thrown at them. I think I did a decent job of that. I don't know if the NCAA cares enough to go in and change it now. I would imagine that they go through it and see how this year looks, and then hopefully they'll make adjustments.
Yeah, hopefully they will. But listen, Evan, I've kept you for long enough. I appreciate the time, my man. I'm going to let you get back to doing your, like, seven other day jobs.
Thanks for having me, dude. I appreciate it, man.
And now I'm thrilled to welcome on to the podcast one of basketball Twitter's most prolific members. You might know him as the man that broke the news that Carmelo Anthony was getting cut, even though he thought he was breaking the news that LaMelo Ball was getting cut. His name is Marcus Gradney. You probably know him as @mgrads. Marcus, what's going on, man? It's a pleasure to have you on.
I'm sorry. That's hilarious because that is true. I thought LaMelo Ball was getting cut. I got a call from my source, and he was telling me, yeah, man, I got a call this morning. And he was like, man, Melo's got – they got to let Melo go. So I'm like, what? He just got this fire. And I went and tweeted it. I'm like, man, from my source, LaMelo Ball getting cut in Spire. And then as he kept on talking to me as I'm tweeting, and he's like, man, Doc, can you believe they're doing Carmelo Anthony this way? And I was like, wait a minute, what? You talking about Carmelo Anthony? He's like, what other Melo you think I'm talking about? I'm like, man, I think you're talking about Melo Ball. That's the only relevant Melo right now. And he was like, no, man, I'm talking about Carmelo Anthony. So that's why I wrote the tweet, and that's why some people got it lost in translation. And it got reworded. So,
I remember sorry. That day. That was an interesting 15 minutes on Twitter when all that happened.
Yeah, it was very funny. I'm sorry. Sometimes, you know, you need to wait and hear the whole story before you break it. You know what I'm saying? Instead of jumping to conclusions.
Yep. It just adds to your legend, man. It just adds to the legend. So part of the reason I have you on here is that I'm doing a podcast today on some of these rule changes and how it impacts the sport. And I wanted your perspective because I know that you're close with a lot of these players, and I know that you are unabashedly pro player when it comes to any and all rules and any and all things that happen in the sport of basketball. So I do want to dive into some of those topics with you. But before I do all that, you've been kind of ahead of the curve on a couple guys. Kyle Kuzma and Alonzo Trier are the two that immediately come to mind for me. Trier. I can never get it right. Look, I'm going to pronounce Trier. Half the real names.
Simple. They say it on TV almost all the time, but you can go ahead and keep on calling him Trier.
I try to. I know what it is, but look, if you're going to get on me for pronouncing names wrong, we're going to have a long, long time on this podcast talking about that because I'm not very good at names.
Anyway. Guarantee you never had a problem pronouncing Luka Doncic's name ever.
Yes, I know. Doncic. Whatever. Anyways.
Yeah, whatever.
So okay. Talk to me about what you saw in those guys early on that made you believe they could have the impact that they did in the NBA as rookies. And, you know, talk me through some guys right now who I need to be on to beat the hype.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm like Gordon Gekko over here. Okay. So, so check it. So with Alonzo Trier, I just didn't understand how people didn't see it, period. Okay? Like, he was a leading scorer in the EYBL. Okay? He went to Finley and averaged, like, 90. Okay? Like, I just don't get how people were like, nah, he's not, it's not going to translate over. Okay? I had one big-time blue check boy NBA scout tell me, he was like, I didn't think that the one-on-one was going to translate. I'm like, dude, the NBA is a one-on-one game. How do you think it's not going to translate? Okay, Kyle Kuzma. So I started watching him, and then the first game I really paid attention to was the Duke game when he pretty much went at Brandon Ingram. And there's no way you watch that game and said, you know what, I'd rather have Brandon Ingram than Kyle Kuzma. You know? And we just became friends, and I started watching him play, and I'm like, yo, how is this guy not getting any love? You know? And it's funny because I knew one of his teammates, Jordan, who's from Utah. Jordan, I forgot his last name. He played in Utah. Leverage. Jordan Leverage. And they were teammates. And I kind of noticed Kyle when he was – I was like, wait a minute. But then I started really paying attention. And I was like, I don't understand how you guys are picking a 6'10 guy who got every tool in the tool belt for basketball. I didn't get it. And – you know, I was telling people Kyle Kuzma and Alonzo Trier, but Alonzo Trier, like when he was in college, how do you guys not notice this man is getting 20 points on like 8 or 9 shots a game? Do you understand what I'm saying? And like when he came back and Laurie shrunk, that wasn't Alonzo's fault. That's just, if you watch Laurie play, like I said, Laurie is the number one option. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's the only way he can play is if he's the number one option. That's not bad. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, Laurie doesn't know how to be anything but the number one option.
Right.
That's not a bad thing to have. But I'm just saying, like, Alonzo came back, Laurie shrunk. And then when Alonzo played with DeAndre, like, they were a great thing. It's just that the NC2A comes in, and for some reason, they're just like, this is not going to happen. So they said he tested positive again or whatever, which was bull. So I'm just – so it was crazy. You know, and that's – me watching him, it's just like I'm 1,000,000% eye test Twitter. I don't do the analytics. I'm sorry. I'm not I don't care. I just watch guys. I mean, I just watch guys. Like, I see what guys are doing. And I'm like, yo, what? How do you not see what I'm seeing? That's why I always get mad. My famous quote is, most people have no idea what they're watching when basketball is being played. Because that's how I feel when I look at guys like that. I don't know how you can miss on a guy like Alonzo Trier. But see, here's the thing, Rob. A lot of the media were talking bad about him. A lot of the media hated him. They didn't like him. They didn't want him to succeed. So they're going to write everything bad about him. And people are sheep. They read this stuff and they believe it.
Yeah, Trier was an interesting case because he had all the – one, it was the kind of what happened with Arizona and the NCAA case probably didn't help. And then everything that happened with him and the positive test, I'm sure, was not something that necessarily made the public at large kind of buy into – the saying that all press is good press probably wasn't true in that situation. Give me some guys now that are in college that you kind of see in that same vein. I'll give you two names that I like, I think, a little bit more than the public. One of them is Marcus Howard at Marquette. I think that right. the fact
I love
that
his game.
He shoots the shit out of it. He has kind of that and it's not just like catch and shoot stuff. He's got in isolation. He's got the step backs. He's got the ability to create a little bit of space. He's got that quick release when he does create that mm-hmm. space. And like I said, he's a great shooter, and he is 6 months younger than Trae Young. And I've always I like when the guys are a little bit ahead of the age curve when it comes to where they right. are in school. And I know that you are you're on that same bandwagon. You're not into guys that are like ninth year seniors in high school.
No,
22-year-old freshman.
Right. No, I can't roll with that. And Marcus Howard is good. My college viewing has kind of like dwindled as much now. I'm more in the NBA because like a lot of the guys I've seen grow up that I grew up with in the basketball mixtape world per se, they're all in the NBA. So I kind of pay, but I mean, I like the kid from Virginia a lot. The come on, dude.
DeAndre Hunter.
Yes. Yeah. I like him a lot, even though everybody knows about him. Yeah, I know. But I mean, I haven't watched as much college. Like,
I got a name for you. Here's another guy you got to keep an eye on: Jarrett Culver, Texas Tech.
Oh yeah, I watched him play. He played when they played Duke. Good. Yes, I got to watch him again. I didn't see him play against West Virginia. Good, very good. Yes, but I'm kind of in the what's the fuss about boat with him. I got to watch him again.
I just
now,
love.
Not hating.
I love him because he shoots it. He's like 6'5". He can put him in. Yeah,
he can play.
My thing with him is like I don't think he's going to be a star, but I think he's a guy that you know you are going to get a starter,
well,
and he just kind of
because Alonzo Trier wasn't even supposed to make the team.
He wasn't even supposed to be in the NBA.
Exactly.
So you know these kids as well as anyone. Okay. So let me ask you this.
Right.
What do you and I know you're going to have an opinion on this. So what do you think is the biggest misunderstanding that like the media and kind of the public at large and people in general have when it comes to elite talents at the high school and the college level and the way that they kind of matriculate from that level to the NBA? What's the biggest misconception? What's the biggest misunderstanding? Is there anything that you don't think we see?
Man, this is a good question because when I did my little podcast the other day at 3 a.m, I kind of touched on this, but the biggest misconception is that all the 5 stars are good players. I mean, I think a lot of it is based on what AAU team you play for, because if coaches have an agenda for a certain AAU team, you'll have the narrative will fit. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like mm-hmm. if a coach isn't liked by a certain person in the media or whatever, or a person in the game or whatever, who's got a little bit of power and people listen to what he says, things can be misconstrued and narratives can be false narratives can be put out and believed. Right now, but with some of these kids, just people think that just because they're an elite talent, that everything in their life is going good. Oh man, you're getting free shoes, man. You go out to eat, you getting all your meals paid for, you get your own bed on road trips. You know what I'm saying? Like stuff like no, I mean trust me, like stuff like that, right? Everybody thinks that like. I think that's not as beneficial to these kids as people think. Like, I think that the AAU season is way too long. I think that these kids are playing 120 games, and like you're like they're not playing that. I'm like, dude, you got to think that they got camps. Dude, these guys play three games a day at camps. You know, like, and it's like they go to like 20 camps a summer. You know, and then they got all these all-star games after Wahome try to. Get in the scene and have these guys playing. So I think there's a lot of basketball being played. You know, the biggest misconception is that these kids are taught the game. And another big misconception is that these guys go to college and for 4 months, 6 months, and then the coach has done a great job with them in 6 months. It's like, come on, dude. Like, that's another misconception of it. I mean, AAU's not bad at all. I think AAU was great for camaraderie. I think AAU was great. I mean, it teaches kids how to be social. They're all on their phones nowadays, you know. But, I mean, just like anything, there's good and bad to it. But, like, the biggest misconception is that these kids, you know, they're just – they don't value basketball. You know, they're just – you're good. And, I mean, there's a lot of misconceptions. And, like, we have – that's a deeper subject than the time that we have allotted. So
one of the things that I've always been curious about when it comes to AAU basketball is, like, where – like, look, I'm a proponent of it. I don't think that it's anywhere near like the evil that kind of it has this reputation of being.
Right.
There are certainly some tweaks to, you know, schedules and tweaks to the way that some of these things work. Like, who necessarily has power is not always the best. But I think more than anything, what you touched on with the amount of games that they play and the fact that so much of it is. Like, so much of what happens is about exposure, when and not enough of it is necessarily about development. And I think you run into a situation where things like just being tall and just having long arms and just being athletic are prioritized, as opposed to, like, teaching this kid how to stay on balance when he wants to step back.
Sorry to cut you off. Sorry.
Okay. No, go ahead.
The biggest misconception is that just because these kids are dunks, that they can dunk and are athletic, that they can play basketball. Oh, my God. Thank you for clearing that up. Okay? Thank you. Right? Okay. So.
I mean, Alonzo Trier is the perfect example of that.
Exactly.
So nothing about him says physical tools.
Okay. Say so, Steph Curry. Okay, you're talking about guys, even Luka Doncic. Okay? Like, not the greatest athletes. Okay? Dude, Kevin Love, once again. Marc Gasol, okay? Look at all the guys who got drafted. Look at my favorite player in the world, Nikola Jokic, okay? That dude, you can't even see daylight under his shoes when he jumps, and there's nobody in the NBA to stop him.
Love it because he's kind of chubby out there. It makes me feel good, Nick. Maybe I still got a shot.
Shape. He smokes cigarettes. Oh, man, he's drinking beer after the game. Dude, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something, y'all, okay? Nobody parties like a big man from Europe. Nobody. Okay. I was in Minnesota. I partied with, what's my big man? Why am I going blank all of a sudden?
Petrovic?
Peck. Nikola Peck. Big Peck. When I tell you, I've never had club experiences like I've had with him than anybody, he's another level. Like, nobody parties like a Euro big man. So I know Jokic is going crazy in clubs when he goes out. I already know. So, but yes, anyways, there's a lot of misconceptions to AAU about these guys being freak athletes that they can play. Okay? Like, there's only so many Anthony Edwards that come along. Okay? There's only so many LeBron Jameses who come along.
Zion Williamson, right? I think you could put in that conversation as well.
I don't know, man. Like, Zion, you got to show me. You got to get to the league and show me you got that. Show me you got that. No, well, Marcus, he's doing it in college. Let's not take away who he's playing for. Okay, Coach K can make me look good right now if I went out there and played.
Fair enough.
Okay, let's not forget that. Okay, he's playing for Coach K. Now he has been killing, and I would definitely kick the tires. You know, and like if I pick him number one, if he doesn't pan out. Hey, if he can give me one or two dunks a game, I'll fill the stands up. Okay? I'm chilling. You know? And I'll sell jerseys to the kids who love him because he dunks. Okay? So, everybody's all hyped on him once again. Great player so far. Mixtape Messiah. But we'll see what happens when he gets to the NBA. You know? Like, that's all I'm saying.
No, that's actually a good point because when you get to the NBA, like, he's a – no matter what level and what sport – whatever field, court, anything that he's on, he's going to be like the top 1% of the 1% of athletes. He's just that physically gifted. But I think he's got a better basketball IQ than at least I thought he did coming into college. Like, he reads the game pretty well. He's a pretty good passer. He's got a little bit of like I just think he's got a little bit of shit to him. So, but you're right. Yeah, and we have to see what happens once he gets to playing basketball against guys that are closer to what his level of physicality is.
Thank you, because like you're gonna laugh and think this is crazy, but Steph Curry isn't gonna go flying back off of a lowered shoulder from Zion like some of these kids in college would. Like, what? Man, Steph Curry's little. No, Steph Curry's not little. He's the same height as Russell Westbrook, okay? Like, they're both 6'3.5", but people don't talk about that. Russell Westbrook's a big guy. Steph's a little guy, okay? But anyways, so what I'm saying is, you're like, what? People don't understand that. Like, he's going to put his shoulder into Marcus Morris, and Marcus Morris is going to be like, okay.
What else you
I'm
got?
Still right here in front of you. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not even just saying Marcus Morris. I'm just giving that as an example as to who these guys are really going up against. You know, like what people don't understand when they play, when they watch the NBA basketball, and they say so-and-so is terrible. No, he's not. He's quote-unquote maybe not having a good NBA game, but he's not terrible. So that's what I'm trying – that's what I want to see. Like, he may come in and get it and kill. You know, he may come in and struggle. You don't know. Like, remember guys like Luke Kennard? You know? Like, so I'm just saying, like, you never know. Because I've gotten arguments with you guys about Luke Kennard. Y'all said everything you wanted, and now it's been mightily quiet. And that's all I'm saying. I'm not trying to single him out. But I thought he was going to do good in the NBA. Has he been?
I don't know. Honestly, I haven't heard about him since he left Duke. I couldn't tell you one thing that he's done since he left Duke. I do know that Donovan Mitchell has been pretty good in the NBA, though, and he was picked right after Luke Kennard. So. Yeah. So let me ask you about this, Marcus, because I know that you've been pretty vocal about this as well. The NBA has one of the rules that they changed with this one of the things that came along with like Rice Commission and all the fallout from the FBI investigation is that the NBA has opened up a door for kids to jump straight to the G League out of high school. It's what, like $125,000 salary that they get.
Right.
I know that you have been a proponent of kids skipping college altogether. Just talk to me about what you think are the pros and cons for the players in that situation, because I know that your perspective is different than a lot of people.
That $125K, that's nobody's jumping on that. Okay, that's like, say Zion. Okay, say that happened last year and Zion were to take that. First of all, Zion's coming out and he's getting a shoe deal immediately. That's going to carry him into all throughout the G League season, right? But say Zion goes out in his first three games, he has 25, 30, and you know, 24 and 17 rebounds. And he does double-doubles. You think he's going to keep on playing? You know what I'm saying? Like, they're going to shut him down. Like, people think too much of it. That, oh, man, this is really going to – no, you guys need to stop reading the fines and what they're showing you, because that's not for everybody. Like, that's for, like, Anthony Edwards. That's for, like the Mobley brothers. That's for, you know, Evan Mobley. Like, that's for, like, guys who, like, they know are going to go to the NBA. And, you know, you go there if you don't want to go to college, you hear the $125K. But see, guys of that tier are going to come out and they're going to have shoe deals and all kinds of stuff. Now, my thing is, if you don't think you're in that, if you're not on that level and you don't want to go to college, there should be other options. You know, go to the G League. Not everybody wants to go to the G League because, like you said, the travel and everything, it's like, man, it's worse. Some guys travel better with their AAU teams than they do with their G League teams. Trust me, I have plenty of friends who are like, hell no, not going back to the G League. Sorry, can't do it. You know? So, like, my whole thing is, like, the NCAA trying to do that, they know nobody's going to go for that. Okay, they know. If that's a facade, that's not going to happen. Nobody's running with that. So they're kind of making it where you have to go to college. I say, like, it's good. My whole argument on Twitter with, you know, with Evan and all those other guys try to chime in, I'm like, dude, I'm not talking about the 50th-ranked player going to the G League. That'd be suicide. You know, I'm talking about, like, man, the number one, number two, number three guy, because, first of all, the NBA's not going to let them fail. That's first of all, you know. And if they do go, they're going to make it, hey, get 30 in your first two games, you're done. You've already shown us you can play in this league. All right, go home for the year. You know, there's different ways to do it. I think it's a facade. I mean, I think it's like they're trying to say, well, we have the option for people, if they don't want to go to school, they can come do this. Not everybody's being able to do that. So my thing is, like, they're trying to lower the top, but there's nothing, but that's not, like, it's weird because you go to college, you're risking a lot. You go to the G League, you're risking a lot, but you're getting paid.
Right.
You see? So it's like, there are some guys where college isn't for them. But if they're going to the G League, we show them that, you know, playing in the NBA and playing in the G League is two completely different things. You know why? Okay, how do you know why? Because I played JV in varsity as a sophomore. My JV coach hated me, okay? Because I get like 8 points, 10 points in the JV game. I come out varsity game, I'd have like 13-8 as a sophomore. And he'd be like, why do you play so much harder in the varsity game than you do in the JV game? I'm like, nobody wants to play JV, coach. You know, and that's just the truth. That's just the truth. I'm sorry. I didn't want to play JV. Are you serious? I didn't, you know, but hey, whatever. You know, I'm sorry. So that's how some guys feel about playing in the NBA after playing in the G League. You know, that's just how some guys feel. I think that there should be the option of the new CBA. There has to be one and done taken out. It has to go back to where it was, that you can go to high school, you can go to college, or you can declare. There shouldn't be there's got to be 2 years. I don't think that the NBA and the NCAA should ever be working together on a collective bargaining agreement on what the NCAA is going to do with the kids. Because to me, that just sounds kind of weird, don't you think? Like, it sounds like something.
Well, the NCAA doesn't. The problem is they don't necessarily have the player's best interest at heart. Like, their goal isn't.
They don't necessarily. They don't at all.
Yeah, their goal is the most money that they can make for the institutions that are a member of their association. Whereas the NBA, even the NBA, doesn't necessarily have the best interest of the individual player at their heart, and that's why the players' association is supposed to be the one that's involved in those negotiations, because that's where you're supposed to get the representation. Correct.
Right. Yeah.
All right, so let me ask you this. One thing that you do also support is the idea of players, like, not necessarily going to college, and I know you're pro Mitchell Robinson and the direction that he takes. I'm of the mindset that kind of worked out pretty well for him, but that, again, is not an option that is ideal for everybody. Or like someone like Terrence Ferguson. Like, I know that when he went to Australia, that's something that worked out for him, and it actually worked out pretty well. I'm pretty sure I saw him playing in the for the Thunder the other day. But I know that you are for that decision. So just kind of walk me through why you think those are that works, and why you think that's a good option for certain guys.
Because DeAndre Ayton, there's no point for him to go to school. Andrew Wiggins, there's no point for him to go to school. Anthony Edwards, why are you going to college? What are you going to do at Florida State? Play 7 meaningful games? Okay. And if you make the tournament, hopefully if you make the tournament, okay. Mitchell Robinson did it smart, but Mitchell Robinson had too much baggage. Like, if Mitchell Robinson hadn't committed to Western Kentucky, decommitted, then shown up on campus and then left and then said, I'm not playing college basketball, I think he'd have been a top 10 pick. Okay. If he had did it a different way. Some of these guys don't need college. It's a waste. Some of those guys, like Jaden McDaniels, he doesn't need to go to college. Okay. Evan Mobley is going to waste time at USC. I'm sorry, Jay Hart, love you, but there's no point for Evan to go to college. Why not stay and work a year, get your body right, so when you get to the NBA, you're because, okay, put it to you like this. This is what I said about Jaden McDaniels. Say he works out for a year, goes and works out, gets a great trainer, nutritionist, everything, and he comes back and he's 6'11", 225, 230. Okay, he's not going to get to be 225, 230 in college, eating with how they eat and everything. Everybody thinks, oh, man, they got everything set up. Do you know how many times I call players and they're like, I'm eating pizza. They call players like, yeah, we're at coach gave us X amount, blase, blase. Top players, it doesn't happen like that as much, but sometimes it does, okay? Sometimes it happens.
I mean, you walk into the locker room after games and there's like stacks of Papa John pizza for them to, like, yeah, that, exactly, as a post-game meal.
Right, exactly. Instead of getting it catered. Anyways, let's not go. I don't want to get – that's another tangent. Okay, so Jaden McDaniels is going to go to Kentucky, and anything can happen. But what if he goes to Kentucky and the system's not working for him and he doesn't fit in? So then he gets stuck in college. Felipe Lopez, another person. Felipe Lopez never goes to St. John's and goes straight to the NBA. We're talking about him in a completely different way than we talk about him. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because his game is not made for college. It was made for the NBA. There's people, games who aren't made for college. College is a system. NBA is one-on-one. I'm going to break you down. A lot of people don't understand this. Well, so-and-so, not everybody, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. That's all I'm saying. I would much rather guys to go because then they're taking their into their own hands and they're banking on themselves. Like Mitchell Robinson went and did it. Other guys should do it because it's like anything can happen in college. You know, like if a bag was dropped and stuff didn't work out, the college coach would sit there and bad now. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, I'm just saying if that ever happened. I'm just saying, like, there's just no point to me if, right? There's no point to me for certain guys to go to college because it's like you're putting – okay, you have a job where you're going to make $10 million next year, okay? Now, I would rather take it in my own hands and go try something different because I know I don't want to be in school. It's just not for me, man. I just can't do it, you know? I'm going to go work out, I'm going to go to the combine because, trust me, Jaden McDaniels will get invited to the combine. So would Anthony Edwards if they didn't go to college. And they worked out all year. They worked out with the right trainer.
So then, hypothetically, if they didn't end up going to college, how do they – like, who's paying for that trainer? Who's paying for them to live somewhere? Who's paying for the food?
Once again, we're talking about Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels. We're not talking about me. We're not talking about Rob Doster.
For people that don't know, tell them who Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels are.
Anthony Edwards is the number one player in the country. I compare him to Michael Jordan. Evan Mobley is the number two player in the country. So is Jaden McDaniels, depending on what publication you look at. To me, those three are guaranteed pros.
And I know all people top hate five to hear that and say that. In the class of 2019. All of them. Except or one is 2020, right?
I thought Anthony Edwards reclassed. To 19, I thought which Mobley?
There's two Mobley brothers. I can't keep.
Oh, Evan. Evan's 2020, and his brother Isaiah is 2019. Okay, but I'm just saying. So let's just say, okay, Anthony Edwards number one player in the country this year, and Jaden McDaniels number two. If those guys say I'm not going to college, they have an agent, and the agent's going to foot the bill for everything. Get them a shoe deal, just put money in their pocket, pay for their training. Pay for their food, pay for their house, everything. Okay, well, that's a lot of money. I mean, dude, for the number one pick, number two pick, top 10 pick, all that money's gonna be made back as soon as they sign as soon as they get drafted anyway. So that doesn't matter. Okay. My thing is like, I would rather take it into my own hands, especially with Mitchell Robinson still getting drafted, and just I'm gonna work out for a year and do it because everything's gonna be taken care of. I'm already a pro because I said I'm not going to college, which means I'm obviously signing with the agent and he's going to take care of everything. That's what, to me, in a situation like that, when I am playing with all the money that's going to happen in the NBA, I'm sorry. And this is, like I said, it's not for everybody who's thinking like, yeah, but everybody can't do that. Exactly. Hey, some people are just, you know, born more gifted than others. It's just, hey, it's just how the cookie crumbles. You know, it's real life. Some people are better at basketball, and, you know, that's why it happens the way it happens. I would never, if I was their parents, I'm never sending my kid to college. And I had a 6'11 stud like Evan Mobley or Jaden McDaniels. No way. Not me. Sorry. Well, no. There's no point. But then you got people, you got guys like Anthony Davis. Man, I love college. Okay, Anthony Davis, you're the number one pick. Let's go to the 15th man on the bench and see if he loved college. You know, it's different for everybody. You can be the number one player on the team and still hate college. Everything's happening how you want it. I'm away from home. I don't like this. I hate this.
I think the larger point is that every player, it doesn't matter who you are. Every player it's a different situation, and you can't paint it all with a broad brush. There's individual situations that fit better going straight pro. Individual situations that make more sense to go to college. Individual situations that make more sense to go to Australia or whatever it is. So last thing, and you can answer this real quick. Is there one – let's pretend that you're Condoleezza Rice. Is there one rule that you would change other than, like, getting rid of amateurism? Because we're both on the same page with that. But is there one rule that you would change in kind of what the structure is of currently with college basketball that you think would make any sense? Or is it all just – are you of the mind where it just doesn't even, it doesn't really make sense the way that it's set up for kids that are more than just someone looking to get their education?
Well, I'm going to go completely off topic, kind of, but in the same topic. It's just funny to me that those four, those coaches were the ones who were blamed for all these rule changes taking place, which isn't going to change anything. Condoleezza Rice and the NCAA, it's just a joke. It's just a joke. It's just a joke. I don't even know what to say because I didn't pay attention because it doesn't matter. Everybody's going to find a loophole, and then they're just going to exploit it like they do now. Like, I don't even know what's going on with the NC2A stuff. What could Condoleezza Rice change to take or remove herself from the equation? That can help. You know, like, I mean, I'm not going to start talking bad about her because she's a very educated woman. But, like, what is she? My number one go-to, just because you have a degree does not mean you know sports, okay? Like, I have Ivy League degrees, I know what I'm talking, no. Sports is something completely different. Sports is something like you have to know. I'm sorry, you have to know sports to be a part of it. Some people don't, and some people are hanging on to this degree equals, you know sports. It doesn't. Anyways, I mean, what would I change? Why is there, like, college coaches should be able to recruit as much as they want. I'd take that away. If you took that away, I think if you took away that, that's what the NCAA won't do. But if you took that away and let the open season recruiting all summer, oh my God. Like,
it would significantly reduce the number of transfers because you might actually be able to get an accurate evaluation on these kids. The only thing I would say to that, though, is that, like, that would just create too much incentive for, like, we're already talking about how hard it is for these kids to play in the summers with as many tournaments and as many games and as many camps as they have. If every single weekend is another exposure event, all of a sudden, you know, you're looking at a situation. Well, I guess it could go one of two ways.
Trust me. You're giving these college coaches too much credit. They hate to work. So
they do. That's the truest thing that you said on this podcast.
Oh, wow. So everything else I said was a lie? Thanks, Doctor. What a friend. Anyways, so what I'm saying is they don't like to work. So they would, trust me, they would all get together and be like, oh, we're going to go here. We're going to go there anyway. And this whole month, we're not even going to show up. Like, let the kids improve this. Like, trust me. It wouldn't be a no because the coaches don't like to work. So they would just keep it to where they want. Like, why don't you guys ask the coaches what they want? Like, I'm sure they'd love to be able to recruit anytime. Like, leave it open. Like, let them recruit. Like, are you serious? Like, this is like their job's on the line too.
That's the irony in all of this, and I think we can end it with this, is that the decision that was made by Condoleezza Rice and by this commission on college basketball, the one thing that they didn't, the one group of people they didn't talk to were the group of people that were actually affected by this. The players, the coaches, the AAU coaches, the high school coaches, the kids that are getting recruited, they are the ones that have no say in the way that this all kind of played out. And it's unfortunate that the people that are directly affected by the rule changes didn't actually have any say in what those rule changes would be and whether or not it would help them.
Yeah. Think about what you said. It's like the people who think voting works. Anyways, yes. Yeah, let's end it with that. I mean, nobody ever asked the masses what they think. It's the people who are in the majority that make the decisions for the people in the minority, always, because people equate money to smarts, and that's what is the number one problem in society, period.
And the people that have the power want to keep the power. The people that have the money want to keep the money. And the people that make seven figures at the top of the NCAA want to keep making those seven figures. Marcus, I think that's a perfect way to end it, man. Listen, I appreciate the time. If you guys want to follow him on Twitter, he is at MGrads. You are probably already following him. I appreciate the time, brother. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Thanks, Austin.
Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter.
Give me 5 stars.